law allows Ruth to glean and also gives her extra grain. In chapter 3, Naomi encourages Ruth to go after Boaz, basically, to try and marry him, because he, we'll go into all of this a bit more in detail, don't worry, is her kinsman redeemer, which I think is a great title. And Ruth obeys Naomi and does it and goes to Boaz, which is her right as a widow, and he says that he needs to make sure there's no one else who should marry her first. And in chapter 4, Boaz and Ruth get married, and Ruth conceives a son called Obed, who ends up being the grandfather of King David. So you know David, who we've done all the thing. Obed ends up being the grandfather to him, who David is then in the lineage to Christ. Okay, so don't worry if none of that made sense. Hopefully this is where I help you. So the story starts. We heard Daz talk about Gideon and the wars, and this is all in that context. So Judges is the time when Ruth happened, when she was alive. So God's people, which at that time is Israel, they knew God, they knew who he was, but they just did not want to follow him. They were being really rebellious, and they just turned away from him. And you can look up more about that in Judges 2, and verse 16 and 18 says they forsook the Lord and followed and worshipped other gods around them. So God had shown that he was real. You know, sometimes now we don't even know, you know, people don't know if God's real. In that time, they knew God was real. They were just being, I'm not going to swear, but they were just being idiots, and they were just like being stubborn, and they just didn't want to follow him. And he tried and tried. And in the end, the Lord let their enemies invade them. So like we saw in that great video, there was a lot of fighting going on. It was, you know, there was war. It was pretty horrible. And he kept saying, all you need to do is turn around and worship me. And yet they would disobey him. And so he didn't defend them when their enemies came. God did stand back. And they were in massive distress because, of course, they lost these battles. And I just think it's really important, though, in that context, to remember that actually God, he doesn't leave us, but it's us who leave him. And it's him who makes the way back for us. And he did that. He didn't just leave these people and be like, well, there you go, you're all going to die, bunch of idiots. He made a plan, which was to raise up judges. And these judges at that time would save them and help them defeat their enemies. So you'd think, brilliant, okay, they've been really stupid, they've turned their back on God, God's made a way, he's brought wise, brilliant people, and yet, they says in verse 16 in Judges 2, they would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods. So God's people continued to disobey him, and so their enemies kept defeating them, and war ravaged on. And God's people basically chose to live apart from God. And it's just quite interesting to see that Ruth, who's one woman, and it's quite a simple story, this is the sort of the world, the context that she's living in. And quite interesting that God even, I think, chose to put this story in the Bible. You know, it's 4 pages about a woman, and it's quite a simple story. And Ruth wasn't an Israelite, so she wasn't one of God's chosen people. And God chose his people because he wanted other people to see that he was real and they would, you know, show that. And yet, this woman wasn't one of them. She was from another tribe and the enemies of God's people, actually. Because we hear at the beginning in chapter 1, Naomi, who's her mother-in-law, it's like doing family tree, isn't it? And her husband, they left Judah. So they were Israelites. They were a couple. They were part of God's chosen people in Judah. But they went to live amongst their enemies. Okay, so they went to a different land. And they had 2 sons. And their 2 sons married women from this enemy tribe, from the Moabites. And it's, yeah, these Moabites, these enemies, they came from Lot, who had children with his daughter. It was a pretty messed up lineage. And so God was keeping them apart. They weren't good. And it's hard to understand now, but at that time, God had been really clear that God's people should marry God's people. And he wasn't doing this just because he was annoying, boring God who didn't get things. He was doing this because he wanted his best for his people, so that others would see him and see that he was true. And it's different now because, you know, people marry different cultures, different countries, different religions, and we're really used to that, and it's a really wonderful thing in a way. And yet, in this time, God was very clear through his commandments and his law that people were to stay married to people from their same religion who followed him. And he did this because he knew that we're weak, you know, and we get led in different directions. But these two sons of Naomi chose to marry two women, which is where they lived, from a different tribe. So when Naomi's husband, Elimelech, it's not how you pronounce it probably, died, she was a widow in a foreign land. So she was surrounded not by her family anymore, not even by people who followed the same God. She was living a widow in another land. And then her two sons died, and she has two daughters-in-law. And like Liz, she probably didn't have that high expectations. They were from another land, they followed another God. And in the custom then, if that happened, the widows, it was perfectly acceptable, if not the best thing, for them to go back to their mother and father, who would arrange a new marriage, and they would get to have children and all of that. And that was what they thought was good. And Naomi really encouraged that, but she was going back to her land where her God was, and she had heard that their God was now providing food there, and she wanted to go back. So Naomi encouraged her two daughters-in-law and says, you know, she wants them to be happy. And in verse 8, she says, "Go back to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you, as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." And it's interesting, Naomi, in a land of another gods, does speak openly of her God, of the one true God, and his kindness, and of her love for him and her trust for him. She knows she wants to put her life in her God's hands. And one would imagine that these two young widows would have seen that as well, you know, being married to her sons, would have seen her faith in action, hopefully. But also that Naomi wasn't living amongst others who followed Jesus, and how hard that was. So the girls say, "We'll come with you. We'll go back to your God, back to your land. We'll come with you." And Naomi says, "Well, you know, it's good for you, but for me," in verse 13, she says it's more bitter for her what's happened, "because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." And remember, all that bad stuff, the wars, her people are rejecting God. And she talks about God's hand against me. And yet, interestingly, it was her and her husband who left God's land. You know, they walked away and they decided, "We're going to make things happen. You know, we're going to do things our way. We're going to go somewhere else." And it's, I don't know if any of you have done that. I definitely have, when I thought, "Actually, God, you're great, but I've got a better plan over here." And she, you know, their family moved to another area, sort of outside of, I suppose, God's plan. And she says in verse 21, later when she gets to Bethlehem, she says, "When I went away from God's land full," and now she's come back to God's land empty. So even though it was hard for her in God's land, she was full. And now she's coming back empty. And she says, "Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune on me." And we know that following God does not guarantee an easy life. And I'm sure everyone can give testimony to that. And that bad, painful things do still happen. But we, when we choose to let God in and we choose to trust him, we actually know that he's bigger than our problems, and that his presence is with us, that there is comfort, even though there's not a lot of understanding. And Naomi and her family were in God's hands, and she describes that as being full. And then they left that place, and she describes it as being empty. And often we think we can do better than God. And I know I used to live in Hong Kong for a bit, and I went out there being like, "I'm going to follow God, I'm going to do what he wants." And I got there, and it was a sort of a rehab for people coming off heroin. And I went there, and it was stayed for 6 months, and it was good. And I learned a lot, and it was intense. And then I just left, and I didn't pray. I just left because it was really hard. And I just decided that I would just do things my own way a bit. And maybe like Naomi and her husband, you know, sometimes you don't even let yourself think things through. You just move on to somewhere to make it, you know, better for yourself. And I stopped listening to God, and I prayed, but I didn't listen. And I knew he might ask me to go back there. I didn't want that option. I wanted to be in England, where my friends were. And to be really honest, I know this sounds awful, but I didn't have a big heart for Chinese people or for drug addicts. And over the next while, I was back in England, going like this. I love you, God. And over my heart, it did go hard. My dad, who's an atheist, even noticed. He was like, are you happy? And I went to church, and I served the poor, and I functioned as a Christian. And not many people noticed, but in me, there was no peace at all. And I knew that I was running away from God. I was choosing, like this couple, just to live in a different land from where he was wanted to hold me, basically. And in the end, I went back for a holiday for 2 weeks because the lady who runs it asked me to go back. And I walked in, and there was just, I just had peace and no understanding, but peace. And I was close to God, and I could hear him, and I wanted him. And I don't have a clue why it had to be Hong Kong. I do now. But at the time, or drug addicts or Chinese people. But in the end, it was about trusting what God had. And I wanted him in the end. So I did, and gave up trying to push agendas in my life and controlling things. And I suppose it's just believing that only God really knows what's best for us. And that's him. It's not anything else. It's him. And so it seems Naomi, who we read about, in some capacity, maybe she just followed her husband. Maybe it wasn't even her fault, you know, they'd left God's land. She was a dutiful wife, but she knew being far from God meant that she was empty. And that led her to believing that God was against her. And he's never against any of us. And we can start believing things that aren't even true when we don't let him in. And Ruth decided, though, her daughter-in-law, that she would stay with Naomi. And she, a Moabitess, so she's different tribe, would go and accompany this older lady to a foreign land that followed a different God and to a place where she knew people wouldn't like her. And she, you know, her colour, she would have looked different. She couldn't just pretend, you know, I'm like you, no one will notice. She knew she was going to a hostile place. And yet, she says to her mother-in-law, she says, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. It's quite full on what she's saying. She's really committing herself to this lady. And it's almost, it's like a vow, like a marriage vow, for example. She's saying, for better or for worse, I'm going to serve you. I'm going to walk through life with you. And she's committing to herself whatever that brings. I don't know how many people are married or not, or have made vows in friendship or life or their parents, but it's a big thing what she's doing. And I don't know if any of you remember a while back, we looked at Jonathan and David and that vow of friendship that they made to each other. And that really got them through tough times. And also the same word, sort of vow, promise, as covenant. And that it's what God gives to us. It's his promises that we can walk in. And he does it throughout the Bible. He speaks over us promises. And they're the things that we can hold, the truths that we can hold in our lives. You know, right from Genesis, and he speaks to Isaac, and in 2 Corinthians, which speaks over us as well. He says, I will live with them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. So Ruth is saying this vow. She's committing to her mother-in-law. She doesn't know what that really means, but she knows it will be hard. And this one promise, this vow, will change her whole life. She could have gone back, remember. There was an option. She could have gone back to be with her parents, get married again, etc. But she's chosen to give up her life to follow and serve one other person. She's not getting on a stage and saying, I'm amazing. She's not going to get loads of credit. It's just one person she's serving. And her commitment and her serving her mother-in-law, I think, really echoes God's heart and his commitment to us. He's not going anywhere. We can go off. He's not going anywhere. He's committed to us. And for Ruth, this walk, this commitment, it didn't look super spiritual. It was hard. It was walking a long way to a foreign land. And then when they arrived in the foreign land, in chapter 2, verse 2, we hear about her going into the fields to pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes she would find favor in. And this must have been quite hard and humbling work. And they had no income and they needed to eat. Two women, pretty much basically on their own. Ruth was there to serve her mother-in-law, and she did it out of choice. She ended up in a field that was owned by a man called Boaz, a relative of Naomi's. And he was a man who clearly loved God, and even in his work and amongst his employees, he put God first. And when he saw Ruth out in the fields and found out who she was, and she was there serving her mother-in-law, in verse 8, which is somewhere, chapter 2, verse 8, she says, "My daughter, listen." He says, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field while the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that have been filled." So Boaz, a man of God who's respected, he owns land, chooses to help this woman. And then you can look, find chapter 3 in verse 10. And he says, "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men." And oh, don't worry, go back. I'm in the wrong chapter. Chapter 2. Verse 8. And Boaz says to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the harvests are working, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you, and wherever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." Sorry, now I've read that twice. My notes aren't working. And Boaz replied, "I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." So she had given up her hopes of a new family, and she was picking leftovers in a field. I don't know if anyone's here done manual labour. I haven't done that much. Not fun. And yet, it's amazing. She's grateful. Her attitude is grateful. She didn't presume that she would be favoured and some servant who would be lifted up. And she was grateful for picking up not even the main harvest, just the leftover bits from the harvest. And she was putting someone else above her. But it was just everyday serving, and that's how she got noticed as well by Boaz. And Ruth stayed close to the servant girls, and she would glean daily, and she lived with her mother-in-law. And it's a great story, and it does make me think, what do we learn from this? We don't live then. I doubt any of us have ever gleaned. It's a story that's so far pretty simple in some ways, and it tells itself, and it makes you think, why has God put this story in the Bible? It's a beautiful story, and it's an amazing story of a sacrificial lifestyle, isn't it? And we can learn, for example, that, you know, we make important decisions in our lives, which way we're going to go, like we hear Ruth did. And we also know that as we do that, often God will require and ask us to live in a really sacrificial way. What does that mean for us, a sacrificial way? And it's really challenging to think, are we? Because we should be. Are we? And we can learn that when we do, and when we give up everything, like Ruth did, we can trust God and he will provide. And it might not be exactly what we hope for. I doubt her big dream was to be picking up grain in a field behind other people. But yet God gave her enough, and then through Boaz gave her a bit more, and she was able to eat. And in Ephesians 6, verse 7, God says, work with enthusiasm as though you were working for the Lord rather than from people. And we can remember, she's lost her husband. She's in a foreign land. You know, she could be just crying all the time. She could be really given up on life. And yet she's choosing to work. She's choosing to work with enthusiasm for the Lord. And it's clear, we can choose our attitude to our circumstances rather than let the circumstances dictate our emotions. And Ruth is really extraordinary at this. And she clearly chose to serve and work hard. And in that, she is serving God. In loving her mother-in-law, she was loving God. That reminds us, remember, when Jesus later says in Matthew, "For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me." And the king will tell them, "I assure you, when you did it to one of the least of these brothers and sisters, you were doing it for me." And the king, who is Jesus, what would he say about us today? Are we doing that in the way that Ruth did that, in the way that Christ did that? And God sees how we love one another, and he sees actually how we love those people who need things from us. It's easy loving people who don't need things from us. You know, we can give as we choose. But what about when someone asks us to give something we don't want to give? It's pretty uncomfortable. And it's easy to listen to the world and put ourselves first and look after me. But Jesus says, asks us to put others first and to trust him to look after us, which is why we need to put him first. So the story goes on. This is just the second half of the story, nearer the end of my talk though. And the story goes on, and Naomi longs to see her daughter-in-law happy, which in those days meant married. Again, culturally different now. You know, it's fine to be single and to be a woman or a man now, but then Naomi really wanted her to be married, and that was, you know, what would bring her happiness. And so she talks about Boaz being her kinsman redeemer in verse 20, which I had to look up, so I had no idea what that meant. But it meant God, being brilliant, had put, you know, all his laws weren't just laws to, like, wasn't just a dictator. They were because he'd sort of thought round every subject, every person. And when somebody was widowed and therefore on their own, and they would, you know, could easily get into trouble, they could not have food, not have family, the man on the husband's side, if there was a man, he could marry her and bring her into his family. And actually, that was her right to ask him to do that, even if he was already married, and to give her children. And that, so when Naomi said that Boaz is your kinsman redeemer, that kind of gave Ruth the choice, you know, to have a new husband. And I think this is quite punchy, but Naomi directed Ruth in chapter 3, verse 3. She says, "Wash and perfume yourself. Put on your best clothes, then go down to the threshing floor," which is where they worked. "But don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. And when he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." So Ruth is... I don't think I'd do that. Ruth is... to be quite honest. She's giving her life into, again, she's not going, "This is what I want, this is what I think." She's putting her life into other people's hands, trusting, you know. Can't have been an easy thing to do, and I'm sure she was a pretty modest woman. Which again brings us to Proverbs 3, and it says, 5 and 6, says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will direct your paths." And it's like, Ruth's owning that, you know, that's what she's showing us. She's not got an agenda. She's letting life and God happen to her, show her the way. And she had free will, but with that free will, she's chosen to serve and obey. And she trusted her mother-in-law, and she lay at Boaz's feet. And when he saw her, in chapter 3, verse 10, which is what I read earlier, he said, "The Lord bless you, my daughter. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a family guardian, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your family guardian, good, let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until the morning." And that was Boaz actually really honoring Ruth. He wasn't just jumping after this younger woman. He was going through the protocols. He was putting the right things in place. And he goes and checks out the other guy who could have married her and goes through all the right things to do. And we hear that Ruth does become his wife. And in chapter 4, they marry, and he is her redeemer as such. And they have a child. And I was thinking, you know, how does the story of Ruth relate to the bigger picture? And it's a wonderful story of a woman, mostly, I think, how she serves and loves. And I think for me, when thinking of her and thinking of that sort of the war around, it's as if this one woman is a light in the darkness. She's alive when there are people all around her not following God. And all the people who do are meant to know God are being defeated. And it's desperate. And at the moment, we're reading all the time in the news and the newspapers, you know, actually in England we're fine, but all around us in the world there is awful persecution and wars going on, and it's dark and it's heartbreaking. And there's death and there's destruction. And people's lives are being, you know, people are being killed, and innocent people. And it's really overwhelming, and it's overwhelming to think, how do we sit in a church like this today and have hope? And how do we be casual and we're so, yeah, God's great, and yet, you know, in the Middle East, people being killed for their faith. And, you know, I don't know enough about Ruth's time to say, but there was certainly, you know, everywhere, people were losing their lives. And yet, with all of this power struggle that was going on around her, she gave her life, just one life, to serving another life, another person. And she wasn't even from the people she was serving. And she didn't know what would become of her life, apart from probably hardship. She didn't have an agenda except to help and to serve a lady older than herself. And yet through serving, an empty woman became full. So how do we find that hope today? And when we hear of everything going around us, and in Iraq and everywhere else, and there's so much darkness that dominates the news. And most of us here, and we know and we believe in Jesus. How does that work? How does that work with what's happening? And we know that he came to die for us. And in many ways, actually, a lot of his life echoes, I think, what we read about in Ruth. He came to a group of people who didn't understand him. They were religious people. They didn't like him, necessarily. And they saw him as a threat. And yet he just served. He served and he served. And he served those who needed help, and those who were weak, and those who cried out, and those who knew they couldn't get through life without him. He didn't have a home. He traveled. He was on a journey. He put his life into their hands. And yet, through doing that, he brought light into the darkness. And he was totally human. And he often just served one person at a time. And he relied on God for everything. And I think we learn from Ruth in that similar way, and her life echoes that later. except that we know that Jesus took it all the way to the end, and he even conquered death. So is there real hope today? Well, I think this message reminds us that it is worth serving and loving the person next to us. And it sounds weak and useless, but if there's anything from this story we can learn and from Christ, it is that as we love people at work, at school, our neighbours, it's worth it. As we love loving one person at a time well and giving our lives into God's hands is actually probably one of the most powerful things we can do. And it doesn't have to be complicated, and we don't have to die because Jesus has done that. But we are asked to love and to give and to serve and to share. And through this, and like we see in Ruth, we demonstrate the kind of love and faithfulness that God desires for us. And this story shows us the difference between what happens when a whole nation does not follow in obedience to God, like we read in Judges, but when one person does follow in faithfulness, like Ruth. And even the tiniest light will always be seen, however dark the situation. And then we remember that it was one servant who did change the whole world.